to VBAC Birth Stories, a podcast where Australians share their journey to a vaginal birth after cesarean.
We are a safe haven for women to share their own VBAC journeys and through these personal experiences, educate and empower listeners.
I'm your host, Mel.
And I'm your host, Steph. And this is VBAC Birth Stories.
Hi everyone, today Steph and I chat to Nadima, who lives in Melbourne with a husband and two children. Nadima, like many of us, never imagined she would have a cesarean, so when she was wheeled into theatre for an emergency cesarean, this naturally came as a shock to her. She was booked in for an induction at 37 weeks due to earlier concerns with her baby's heart rate, but she actually never got to experience labour. Although Nadima doesn't describe her first birth as traumatic, she knew immediately that she didn't want to go through another cesarean if she could prevent it in any way. You'll hear how she prepared herself mentally and physically for her second birth, which was a 51-hour long labor, and how her VBAC unfolded with her nearly 4.2 kilogram baby. This time around, Nadima was supported by her husband, appointed midwife from her public hospital's MGP, and her student midwife, who were with her every step of the way. Thank you, Nadima, for sharing your VBAC journey with us and for your honest reflections about your two births. Please enjoy this episode of VBAC Birth Stories.
Today we're with Nadima, who is a Melbourne mum of two. Hi, Nadima. Did you want to introduce yourself to us? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, ladies. I'm Nadima. I'm married with two children, Hamza, who is 2.5, and Jana, who is nearly 4 months. We live in Melbourne and I'm currently a stay-at-home mum.
Before you fell pregnant the first time, did you have any ideas about birth and pregnancy?
Well, I'm actually the youngest of 10. So my mum had 9 births. Her first were twins. She actually had home birth with them. So
wow, that's amazing. Was it a planned home birth with twins?
It was a planned home birth. It was many, many years ago. So my oldest siblings, my sisters, they're I think about in the 50s now. So they're much older than me. And she actually had them overseas. It wasn't in Australia. And that was the norm back then to have home births.
And whereabouts is she from?
Lebanon. We're from Lebanon.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so is it a bit more like accepted as a cultural norm to home birth over there, do you think? That it is here,
but back then it definitely was. So I think she had 3 or 4 births at home, and all of her births were natural, unmedicated. So that's kind of the idea that I had, and I always thought that I would have the same, but in the hospital. I did always think that I would, you know, get pregnant, and as soon as labor started, get to the hospital early, have an epidural, just relax. And, you know, when I was told to push, but that wasn't the way it went with my first.
Did your mum have any opinions during your first pregnancy, any advice that she gave to you? Obviously, having had 10 children, she was sort of well aware of everything that goes on. Did she say anything to you? Or
she was always encouraging, and she, all of my sisters have had children, and, you know, some have had cesarean, some have had natural, some medicated. And it was just kind of like go with the flow. Yeah. If you have a cesarean, that's fine.
Yeah. Did you want to take us to your first pregnancy and how that went?
Yeah, so I actually fell pregnant pretty quickly. I did have morning sickness that was terrible for about 16 weeks, and I did bleed quite a bit in my first trimester, and I ended up having I think it's called a subchronic hematoma.
Does it just cause a lot of bleeding throughout the pregnancy?
Yeah, a lot of bleeding. My bleeding stopped as soon as I hit the second trimester, but it was, like you would freak out every time you saw blood.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard, especially in your first pregnancy where you don't really know what to expect.
Thinking like, oh, my God, am I having a miscarriage? But, yeah, I ended up thankfully not having a miscarriage. So between then and about 34 weeks, my pregnancy was very good. Nothing complicated at all. Everything went smoothly. And one night when I was 34 weeks, I was getting contractions. They weren't regular or anything, but, you know, being the first time that I was pregnant, I did get a little worried because they weren't going, like they kept coming. They weren't really painful, but they were just kind of like tightenings. So I did call the hospital, and one of the midwives advised that I do come in for monitoring just to make sure everything's all right. So we went in that night and I was monitored for about, I think, an hour, and everything looked fine with the baby. I was getting contractions, but they weren't regular or strong or anything. So the midwife came in and she told me, we'll let you on the monitors for about 20 more minutes, and everything continued to look good, then you'd just be sent home. So I was like, okay. And as soon as she left the room, the CTG monitor started beeping. I didn't know what was going on. And in comes like about 10 people rushing. And it turns out his heart rate had dropped to about 62. And it stayed that way for a while. And they were panicking. And, you know, someone was putting the cannula in. And, you know, they were talking to me, basically just prepping me for the worst, had his heart rate not gone back to normal. And, yeah, it was pretty stressful. But I think after about a minute or two, his heart rate did go back to normal. But they did explain that they would like me to stay overnight just to continue to be monitored to make sure that everything was fine with the baby. So I did stay that night. I was monitored all night. My husband did go home. And the next morning, the doctors came in and they did tell me that there was quite a few dips in his heart rate throughout the night, which they were worried about. So they did advise me to stay for another night and to continue to be monitored. So we did that. And then they just basically came to the agreement that I would be sent home. I would continue to have CTG monitoring every few days and then be induced at 37 weeks exactly, just to be on the safe side.
And that was because they'd picked up a low heart rate. That was the medical reasoning that you were given for the induction?
Yeah, and because it wasn't just a one-off thing, like on the monitors it was showing that I was having continuous dips, like the baby's heart rate was dropping quite a bit.
And they couldn't explain at all, like, what causes that at that time. Was there any explanation given?
No. I did actually end up having an ultrasound to make sure that there was no cord wrapped around the baby's head or anything, and everything looked fine. So they didn't know exactly why he was having those dips. But, yeah, they just said to be on the safe side, we'll just induce you as soon as you hit 37 weeks and we'll get the baby out.
And were you experiencing tightenings at all during that time frame?
I was, but it was kind of just like Braxton Hicks.
Okay.
It wasn't anything regular or strong. I wasn't going into early labor. So I did make it to my 37-week induction date and everything was all good between then.
Were you given any information about the induction process?
Yeah, so they did tell me that I would come in the evening at 37 weeks exactly and have the Foley catheter put in overnight. And then the next morning, they'll break my waters and then have the Syntocin started. So, yeah, all along, I was preparing for that. I didn't question anything at all. I didn't, you know, really research anything. I was just like, whatever the doctors say, I want my baby to be happy and safe. So, yeah, I went in at 37 weeks exactly. I had the Foley catheter put in overnight. It was a fairly uncomfortable night. I did have tightenings all night. My husband did stay that night because I had my own private room. And the next morning, the catheter was taken out and I was one or two centimeters. And immediately one of the midwives broke my waters and it just gushed out. It was very uncomfortable for me to have my waters broken. As soon as they did break my waters, I felt like I was going to faint. I vomited all over the place. It was so stressful. I was telling my husband, like, I'm going to die. I don't know what's happening to me. There's something wrong with me. I still, to this day, I don't know why. But she did say that, you know, just rest for a bit. We won't start the Syntocin until the baby is showing that, you know, it's not in distress or anything. So I was on the monitors after my waters were broken. And, yeah, just to mention as well, I was on the monitors all night that night as well, the night before. Before they even started the Syntocin, on the CTG, you could see that baby was in distress. He wasn't happy at all. They were flipping me from side to side. They just couldn't understand why the baby was in distress and, you know, nothing had even really begun. Like, they hadn't started Syntocin because they were just wanting to see if baby was fine before they did. So, yeah, the doctors kept coming in and out, just basically convincing me and telling me that the labor process hasn't started and he's already in distress. So it's better off to have an emergency cesarean. And, you know, I really didn't want a cesarean at the time. because, you know, I hadn't experienced any labor. Like, I wanted to at least experience some of it, because, like, in my head, I never imagined myself having a cesarean. But eventually, you know, they kind of convinced me. And the midwife that I had at the time, you know, I really didn't get along with. And every time the doctors would leave, she would have all these scare tactics and just tell me, you know, if you don't do this, you know, and the baby continues to be in distress, you would have an emergency cesarean that would put you to sleep. You wouldn't be able to see the baby. And that really scared me. Like, I wanted to be, you know, awake for when my baby was born. So I was just like, oh, God, I'm going to get this over and done with. They straight away took me in.
What were the sort of things that she was pointing out to you?
I don't know. Like, with this midwife, it was, her whole vibe was off from the time I met her that morning. I just didn't get along with her, and she was just like on her computer the whole time, didn't really introduce herself properly. And she just looked like she didn't want to be there that day. And she just wanted the easy way out. Like, she wanted me to have a cesarean. The cesarean was pretty good. I mean, I couldn't fault anything. It was calm. The baby, you know, was born. He was crying. He had an APGAR score of 9. Yeah, so it was all fine. He had a quick checkup. They checked him over, wiped him, wrapped him, and gave him to my husband. And it was just like, yeah, he looks fine. He doesn't need to go to NICU or anything. They just gave him to my husband.
So was there any discussion of why he would have had a low heart rate while they'd been doing the monitoring?
Well, later when we discovered that he did have a VSD and an ASD, which are little holes in the heart, but they couldn't say that that was the reason why.
Okay.
So we still don't know like what it was.
What ended up happening with those holes? Did they close over by themselves?
Yeah, they closed on their own. They were really small. Yeah.
Once he was born, he obviously his APGARs were fine. He appeared to be perfectly healthy. So did he stay with you in recovery, or what happened then?
They sent my husband up to the ward while I was wheeled to recovery, thinking that, you know, I wouldn't be long in recovery. And he was with the baby, like he was holding the baby the whole time. So, yeah, they took me to recovery, which felt like forever. And that was one thing that really stayed with me. I just couldn't understand why my husband and baby weren't with me. Yeah, it seemed like I was there forever. And, you know, it was just like so lonely. And I'm like, where am I? Like, where is my husband? No one could explain anything to me. Like, the midwife didn't stay with me. And, yeah, they wheeled me up to the ward eventually. And my poor husband was there with the baby crying. The baby was crying, and he didn't know what to do, so he put his finger in his mouth so he can suck on his finger a little bit by the time, you know, I come. So, yeah, as soon as I went into the room, yeah, I breastfed him straight away.
That's great. Yeah. So breastfeeding seemed to go positively for you from the beginning?
Yeah, breastfeeding for me, thankfully, was pretty easy. They did help me quite a bit at the hospital as well, like the midwives showing me all the different positions and stuff like that.
Yeah. And did you have that sort of support in the ward after he was born? Did you feel that the care you received there was good?
I did, yeah, much better than the actual, like, labour, like the midwives and the birthing suite.
How were you feeling physically after the cesarean?
I felt okay. I mean, I was heavily medicated. But, yeah, like everything was fine. But I just, you know, I just still couldn't believe that I had an emergency cesarean. Like, I didn't get a chance to labor at all. They didn't give me a chance. I didn't question anything. And yeah, it was just like all kind of a daze.
What was the debrief what was the consensus as you were sort of discharged from the hospital? What did they tell you about the birth and any recommendations for future pregnancies?
They couldn't really explain to me why the baby's heart rate was dipping besides, you know, having the VSDs and ASDs, because they did check his heart rate and his heart after he was born. That's when we discovered it in the hospital. And it was pretty brief, but one of the doctors did just say, yeah, you're definitely a good candidate for a VBAC in the future, as long as, you know, there's 18 months between births.
And had you given it much thought at that stage? And how did you feel as you left the hospital?
I didn't even know what the term VBAC meant at the time. But when she did mention VBAC, the doctor, she explained that that meant, you know, vaginal birth after cesarean. And that stayed with me. And before I even left the hospital, I started researching it, like Googling And that's when I found the VBAC Australia Facebook group. And I immediately joined. And since then, like daily, I would read these ladies' stories. And that's also discovered your podcast from that group and just listened to your podcast. And basically, I was preparing for VBAC. You know, my son was like 2 to 3 days old.
That's great. And so yeah. Had you given much, you'd obviously given it a little bit of thought from the beginning. How did that postpartum period go with your son once you were back home? Was it a fairly positive period for you? I mean, it sounds like breastfeeding was a positive experience. What else happened there?
It was a positive experience. I mean, nothing really negative. It didn't really, I kind of just accepted that I did have a cesarean and just wanted to move on from that and just basically I wanted to forget it and just start preparing for my next pregnancy and birth and what I wanted to do differently next time. And just wanted to educate myself and just kept telling myself, you know, I'm young, first time mom, had no idea.
What were the things that you wanted to do differently?
Look, over time I discovered that there are things, you know, that we can do to prepare our bodies for birth, for labor. Along the way, I kept educating myself and, you know, I was very interested in learning, like listening to all these stories and reading all these stories. I just wanted to have a completely different experience. I wanted to have a vaginal birth and I was determined.
When you fell pregnant with Jana, did you decide to do anything different in terms of model of care?
Yeah, so as soon as I found out I was pregnant and my GP referral to the hospital, I also chose to go to a different hospital at the time as well because I wanted to get into the MGP program. Now, the hospital that I had Hamza at did have an MGP program, but I remember one of my first appointments, one of the midwives told me, don't even bother applying for MGP because you won't get it. It's that packed, basically. So I just said, you know, whatever, okay. But I was determined the next time to get into MGP and I kind of harassed them until they accepted me into the program. Yes. I got a hold of the manager phone number and email and I was emailing, hey, you got a spot for me.
Nadina, how did you know that MGP would be a good sort of path to go down for your VBAC?
From the VBAC support group, they were talking about MGP. And I knew that I would have a better chance of getting into MGP with the newer hospital that I chose because it was a fairly new hospital and they didn't have much patients at the time.
Was that behind your choice to choose a different hospital or was it because you didn't want to go back to the
both?
The first? Okay.
Both, yeah.
So even though, I mean, I guess my question is, even though that first birth, it wasn't a terrible or traumatic experience for you, would you say, but you still didn't want a repeat of it. Why was that?
Because just in my head, I truly never imagined myself having a cesarean. And just thinking of the midwife that was there at the time and like literally no one in the room at the time I had met previously or knew. And I just wanted to make sure that I had a midwife, you know, that I got along with, that I knew, even like an OB that I knew at the time.
Mm. So then how did you come to fall pregnant again? And did you want to take us to that second pregnancy now?
Yeah, so I did fall pregnant quickly again. And as soon as I felt pregnant, I told my GP to send in the referral and to mention that I wanted to be in the MGP program. So she did. I eventually was accepted at about 20 weeks, I think. My pregnancy was pretty good as well. I did have morning sickness for the first trimester. But between then and the birth, yeah, my pregnancy was fairly good. I was one of those ladies.
The pregnant unicorn.
And no bleeding this time.
No, thankfully not.
That's good. So tell us about this pregnancy. So we assigned one midwife in the MGP.
Yeah, she was very pro-VBAC.
Oh, that's great.
She made sure to listen to all of my preferences and she noted them down straight away. And she always booked me in with an OB that was pro-VBAC as well. And, yeah, she was really there for me. It was kind of like a friendship.
So you mentioned, obviously, you've changed your, you've gone a different route in terms of model of care. You've chosen the MGP and you were successful. You were able to get in. What are the things that you did you do differently during this pregnancy? Did you do any courses, any other physical or mental preparation that you did for this feedback?
Yeah, I did do a hypnobirthing course. It was online because of COVID. Also, I was seeing an osteo regularly towards the end of my pregnancy just to make sure that baby was in optimal position. Baby was head down and she was in the perfect position pretty early on. So I wasn't really worried about like having a breech baby or anything. And basically it was just, yeah, I had regular checkups. Everything was always fine at my checkups. And also with the hospital that was at, they were happy to allow me to get to about 41 weeks and a half before talking induction. But it was, they were really good. Like they didn't really mention it or say anything to me. They just, you know, let me just be basically. And then when the time came, they would have, you know, spoken to me about it. But I ended up getting to 41 weeks. And, yeah, I ended up having a very long labor.
Yes, 51 hours, you told us.
Yeah.
You obviously were feeling like a pregnant unicorn and you were feeling very supported during your pregnancy by your midwife and the obstetrician. Was there any resistance at all, like from any obstetrician appointments? No, right? Everyone was on board for you to go into labor.
And I think the main reason was just because everything was basically perfect in my pregnancy. My fundal height was always measuring 2 weeks ahead, and they did want me to have ultrasounds just to keep an eye on baby's size. But I just basically told them, you know, no thank you. I mean, I understand the risks, blah, 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 but I would rather just, you know, not have the scans, because I knew, you know, if baby was showing bigger, they would, you know, use that against me in the end. And I didn't want that.
And what about your feelings about uterine rupture? Were you worried about that at all during your pregnancy?
I wasn't. I mean, I trusted my midwife, and I knew that I would be, you know, at the hospital if anything, you know, anything bad happened. But it didn't really worry me at all.
And your husband and family members were supportive as well about your desire to VBAC?
Yeah, my husband definitely knew how much I wanted a VBAC. We talked about it all the time and he was very supportive. He also wanted me to have a VBAC because he knew how much it meant to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone around me supported it and, you know, just told me, you know, it would be great to hear that, you know, you had a VBAC, because no one in my family that had a cesarean ended up having a vaginal birth after the cesarean. All of their future births were cesareans. So, yeah, I was the only one.
Do you want to take us to your labour and how that unfolded for you?
Yeah, so I was 40 plus 5 and I had my bloody show in the morning and heaps of mucus plugged throughout the day. And around 9 p.m., I started getting mild contractions. So I decided to lay on the couch and put the TENS machine on. And all mine up was getting contractions, but they ended up fizzling out towards the morning. And I ended up, you know, sleeping for a few hours. The next day, the contractions weren't ramping up again. So I decided to go for a walk while listening to my hypnobirthing tracks. And then they did actually start to ramp up, I think around midday. But at that stage, the TENS machine was just annoying me because I did have it on as well all that morning. So I ended up taking it off. And then they started to get very painful. They started to become regular, but, you know, very far apart. So, like, it would come every 10 minutes. And it was that it stayed that way for so long. That night at around 11:30 p.m., I was in so much pain. They were still not close together, but I did decide to go to the hospital. My midwife met me there and she did check, like assess me, and I was only 3 centimetres dilated. And she basically in a nice way told me that, you know, you've got a long way to go. So she did say I could stay if I wanted to, or I could go home, but that she wanted to go home because she wanted to be there for like the real deal. And she kind of just basically had a feeling that it was going to be, you know, a while. So I decided to go home and she went home as well. Yeah, I was just laboring all night. It was super painful. I was in and out of the shower, and with every contraction, my husband was doing the double hip squeezes, which were a godsend. That was the only thing that was helping me throughout my whole labor. Yeah, and it just went on for hours and hours, and I was getting so frustrated that they weren't getting closer together. Yeah, just basically moaning through them, crying, having a breakdown here and there, because, yeah, I just couldn't believe that they weren't, like, so many hours had gone past and they still weren't close together.
Did you use any of those hypnobirthing skills at that time?
I was, but it was very hard for me to just accept, or just to, you know, accept that they will eventually get close together, because I was just so frustrated that they weren't.
Because this was your first experience of contractions, was it what you had expected, or was it different to what you anticipated?
I don't think anyone could ever prepare themselves for that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, like, that's when I was like, okay, now this is the real deal.
And you mentioned also that you had a student midwife follow you.
Yes. So I had a student midwife follow me from pretty early on, yeah.
Cool. So were you keeping tabs, like, with her as well, keeping her updated on the process of where you were with your labor?
Yes, I was. She was fantastic the whole way, both her and my MGP midwife. Yeah, and I was just, I kept messaging both of them and telling them what was going on and calling them. And, you know, they were very supportive. But my midwife did tell me that she'd like me to, you know, head off to the hospital when they were, like, 3 to 4 minutes apart, and I just wasn't getting to that stage.
Were you ever worried about baby's heart rate while you were laboring at home, just because of what had happened in your first birth?
No, it wasn't on my mind at all, because she was a very active baby. Like, even throughout labor and my whole pregnancy, she was always very active. So she had her way of reassuring me all along that, you know, she was fine.
Did you feel as though, do you think it was having a student midwife, but also being in the MGP, that improved the communication with this pregnancy? It sounds like you sort of had that person or those people to touch base with as you were in labor, whereas the first time sounded like some of that communication was absent or a bit disjointed.
Yeah, definitely. They kept reassuring me that this was normal and this was, you know, part of the process, and that they would definitely always be there and, you know, like, meet me at the hospital if I felt like I really could not take it anymore at home. Yeah, all along they were just very supportive.
And so what ended up happening and how did you eventually progress?
I think it was like 2 days in now. And it was 1 p.m. on the day that I gave birth, where I called my midwife. At this point, they were 4 to 6 minutes apart, my contractions, and I called her crying, just telling her I couldn't do it anymore. Like, I was screaming the house down at this point. And she told me, you know, if you feel like you can't do it at home, then I'll meet you at the hospital as soon as I can. We went to the hospital quickly, and she did want to assess me at that point, and, you know, I consented to it. And I didn't want to hear her tell me that I was still 2 to 3 centimetres. So I told her, check me, but don't tell me the numbers. But she did, and I think she saw how exhausted I was and just told me how well I was doing and that I had progressed and that I was fully effaced, but she didn't give me the numbers. She did tell me later on that at that point I was only 4 centimetres. But she did tell me I could go to the birthing suite, and it was just me, her, and my husband, and then my student midwife came in shortly after. I continued laboring using the shower for pain relief and the double hip squeezes with every contraction, as well as bouncing on the birthing ball. And, yeah, just in and out of the shower, trying to get through it. I couldn't sit still. I felt like walking was helping me, walking around the room. And then around 5 p.m. that same day, one of the OBs came in to just quickly go through the risks and the standard practice for VBACs, and that she was happy that I agreed to a cannula. And she told me that she would like to have the CTG on a couple times until I had the baby, just to make sure baby was fine. So I did agree to that. But as she was talking, I had a really strong contraction and my waters broke. My midwife checked the water, it was clear, and, you know, everything was fine. So she ended up leaving the room, continued walking around in and out of the shower, I was very vocal at this point. I really started to doubt myself, and I even asked for an epidural. And the midwife talked me out of it, which I'm thankful for. But yeah, it just, I was so afraid to hear that, you know, I was, what, 5 or 6 centimetres. So I did consent to be assessed that evening, but I didn't want to hear the numbers. The midwife was very happy when she did do the assessment, and she told me, you know, you're very close, you know, keep going. So I did. I kept going. I didn't get the epidural. Towards the end of it, I was like very vocal. I couldn't focus. I told them I needed something like, can I get into the bath? They were hesitant to let me in the bath, but they did agree to it. If I did have the CTG monitor on, like it was a wireless waterproof one. So they did let me in the bath, which really relaxed my body. It was super warm. I was like floating around. I was like, this is the best.
And how was the wireless monitor in the bath?
Oh, it was so bloody annoying. That was one of the reasons why I ended up just telling them, I'll get out of the bath. Just please get these monitors off. And while I was in the bath, my body was so relaxed that my contractions basically just stopped. I don't know what happened then, but I was super relaxed. I was taking a break. I wanted to get out of the bath because I wanted it to just be basically over. And I was like, if this is not speeding things up, then I don't want to be in here. So I got out of the bath. The monitors were taken off. And as soon as I got out of the bath, I leaned on the bed and I told them I need to push. And, you know, they were all really excited. Yeah, just, you know, follow what your body's telling you. If you need to push, start pushing. And that's what I told them. Are you just going to let me have the baby over here on the floor without a mat? Yeah. And then they all laughed and said, no, get on the bed if you want. Do whatever you want. You know, we're here. If you want to do it right then and then, we'll get you a mat right now. So I got on the bed on fours, and, you know, I was just following what my body was telling me to do. With every contraction, started pushing, and I was like roaring at this point. And just
did it feel like pooing, like wanting to poo for you? I'm just curious. How did it present, the pushing sensation for you? What did it feel like?
Yeah, like I needed to poo.
Yeah.
It was like a relief though. Like I really felt like, oh, this felt good. Like it was definitely painful, but it felt good at the same time. It was a relief. So yeah, I was on all fours on the bed and I just kept, you know, pushing. And I remembered my hypnobirthing course, which was to breathe through it and to breathe the baby down, but I just couldn't. I just needed to push. And I just pushed. I kept pushing with every contraction. And then eventually the baby's head started to show and they were very encouraging. You know, they told me, you can feel the baby, put your hand on the baby's head. So I did, as the baby was, you know, coming down. I think she saw that I was going to tear. They told me to lean on my side with my leg kind of up to the side because that would avoid my tearing. So I did, and out she came. She was so slippery. As soon as she came out, they put her on my chest. And, oh, my God, it was such a relief. I couldn't believe that I did it. I was in such shock at that point. And, yeah, it was just bliss. It was the best.
Wow. Did you have time with her on your chest, or then did you have an actively managed third stage with the placenta? What happened?
Yeah, so as soon as she was out, she was on my chest. I still remember how she smelled. I still remember how slippery and warm she was. And I was holding her the whole time. And about an hour went past and I hadn't birthed the placenta yet. So, yeah, I was still holding her and her cord was still attached. Like we hadn't cut the cord yet.
Wow.
The midwife just told me, get up and walk to the bathroom, sit on the toilet. They did have one of those cardboard bowls in there. And just see what your body tells you to do. Just sit on the toilet and we'll go from there. So I did, and as soon as I bent down to sit on the toilet, it just basically plopped out. No contraction, no nothing. It just...
Wow. It sounded like they were giving you so much time for that to happen as well, and they allowed you to hold your baby for all of this time. Was she ever taken away from you, or anything?
No, they didn't at all. They did give me a lot of time. It was about an hour after I gave birth.
Was all of this sort of something you'd spoken about to them, that this was important to you?
Yeah. It was on my preference that I wanted delayed cord clamping, and I didn't want to have the injection.
Were you able to breastfeed her straight away before your placenta delivery?
Yeah, as soon as she was out and put on my chest, I had her breastfeed straight away.
And so how did you feel after all of this?
I was in such shock. I just couldn't believe, as soon as the baby, I had given birth, everyone in the room was so excited. You know, my midwife was like, you did it, Nadima, you got exactly what you wanted. And I was so, so happy. You can tell in the photos that they took. Yeah. You should see my eyes. I was like, oh, I couldn't believe that this just happened.
Yeah, that's great.
I wanted to mention, my midwife was amazing that, an hour before I gave birth was when, her shift ended. But she knew how close I was to giving birth. She didn't want to miss it. So she stayed there for the whole birth and until I had the placenta. She was absolutely amazing.
So yeah. She was really invested in making a positive experience for you. Yeah.
Both her and my student midwife really wanted to be till the very end, and they did. You know, I'm sure they were very exhausted as well, but they did stay.
Did you have any tearing as well, Nadima?
I did. So as soon as I birthed the placenta, they assessed me, and at this point it was the new midwife. My midwife had gone home. She assessed me and she told me that she thought that I had a third degree tear, but that she would get an OB to come in and check. One of the OBs did come in. She did check me and she told me that I had a third degree tear and that I would need to be taken to theatre, to be stitched up. So I was like, oh, okay. I remember clothing the baby and giving her to my husband before they wheeled me to theatre to stitch me up. I had the spinal put in, and as I was laying there, the doctor did have another check and she told me, oh, look, Nadima, it looks like it's actually a second degree tear, but since you're here, since you've had the spinal put in, we'll just stitch you up. And I thought, oh, okay, that was kind of bummer, but it is what it is. That was basically the only thing that annoyed me throughout the whole process.
So did it turn out that you could have actually been stitched up? Yeah, not without going into theatre. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the aftermath of this birth, how was it being on the ward and how did that compare to your first birth?
It was kind of like second nature because I had done it all before. I knew exactly what to do this time. I ended up going home a few hours after I gave birth. I didn't stay there for long. Baby was healthy. She was actually nearly 4.2 kilos.
Wow.
So she was a big baby.
How much did Hamza weigh?
It was much smaller. He was 2.9.
Wow. I guess he was also born at 37 weeks, right? So yeah, I wonder.
So there was 4 weeks between his birth and Jana's birth.
Oh, yeah. Nadima, do you think you would do it again if you were to have any more children, or is it something you've thought about?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, everyone asks me the same question, which did you prefer, or would you do it again? And my answer is always, I'll definitely want another vaginal birth.
Did you find recovery a lot easier than the cesarean, or was it just very different?
They were both pretty painful. I mean, having major surgery is pretty hard, and also the second degree tear as well. I am only not even 4 months postpartum. I am still recovering.
If you feel comfortable sharing, what does that sort of mean for you in terms of recovering? Is it to do with your pelvic floor fitness?
It's just the soreness around the tear, basically. That's it, yeah. They were fairly different, but it just felt more natural the second time around, the whole recovery process.
Would you have any advice for other women who are attempting a VBAC or on a VBAC journey? What advice would you give to them?
Just to educate yourself as much as you can, listen to your body, make sure everyone around you is on your team, make sure you have good care providers, believe that you can achieve it and you will.
Yeah, that's great advice, actually.
Did you have any cultural practices after the birth, like in your postpartum period? That I was wondering whether you did have any from your Lebanese background.
No, not really. Nothing specific. No, I didn't want to do anything. I mean, there is the shaving of the baby's head.
Yes, but
she has such beautiful hair that I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
I have heard this, yes. And I think it's the reason is because of, so the hair will grow back even more beautiful, right?
Yeah. She had such beautiful black hair that I was like, nah, I didn't want to do it.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I don't think I would be able to do it either. Even though it was a 51-hour sort of a marathon, you did it. Amazing. Well done. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for having me. And I hope that everyone, you know, that's watching, that's pregnant and, you know, wanting a VBAC, I hope they will get what they want because it's just such an amazing experience.
Thank you for listening to this VBAC story. If you like the show, please subscribe and feel free to leave a review. If you would like to connect with us on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for VBAC Birth Stories. If you have a question or you'd like to express interest in sharing your personal story, email us at vbacbirthstories@gmail.com. VBAC Birth Stories is a podcast where we share women's lived experiences. Please be advised that it's not intended to replace medical advice. If you have any concerns at all during your pregnancy, please always speak to your healthcare provider.